Welcome to the Next Level Income Show, where it's our goal to raise your income, investments, and your life to the next level. I'm your host, Chris Larson. You can get a free copy of our book at nextlevelincome.com. Just click on the book link. Also, if you're an accredited investor, check out our invest link to learn how to gain access to our new self-storage fund, as well as other institutional quality real estate opportunities. I'm super excited to have Dave DeBow on the show today. He's going to be talking about a whole system and process about how to raise capital, and a special offer on how to get 50% off his course, as well as how to get his free ebook today. On today's show, we have Dave DeBow. Dave has been an entrepreneur since 1993 and a real estate investor since 2001. In that time, he has done deals ranging from creative no money down transactions, rent to owns, and more recently, multifamily properties. He's the author of 7 books and has been teaching and training people about marketing and real estate investing since 2006. He's also shared the stage with the likes of Robert Kiyosaki of Rich Dad, Poor Dad fame, Robert Herjavec from Shark Tank, George Foreman, and many others. Today's show is sponsored by Money Insights and their Investment Optimizer strategy. In my book, I share how I use this same strategy starting over a decade ago to invest my money in 2 places at one time. This strategy has been used by the wealthiest for generations for estate planning, minimizing taxes, preserving wealth, and increasing stability for their investments. Now you can do the same thing. In addition, you can build a plan to build an emergency fund, pay for college, fund a business, plan for retirement, and ultimately optimize your total financial picture. To find out more information, check us out at the banking link at nextlevelincome.com. Dave, welcome to the show.
Chris, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Dave, we had a great conversation beforehand. I always love having guests on the show that are from Canada. We were talking about my wife's from Canada and you're way on the West Coast, which if you're looking at the screen, whichever way that is for you. And she's from the Montreal area. But for those who don't know your background, Dave, maybe you could share a little bit with the audience, you know, how you got to this point.
Awesome. Well, that, I mean, 52 years old there, Chris. So it could be a long story, but I'll condense it. So bottom line, yeah, born and raised in beautiful British Columbia, Canada. And after graduating with a really mediocre result in university, unlike you, the smart guys that really seem to whole university thing, there weren't a lot of job offers landing on my door way back in 1990 with a basically asinine degree in psychology and a 2.3 grade point average. So I started traveling around and went and traveled around Latin America for a few years, ended up in a beautiful little country called Costa Rica.
Oh, love Costa Rica.
Oh, you've been? Awesome. Yeah, well, I loved it too. So I decided, there I was. I was 23, 24 years old at the time, clueless, had about $1,000 to my name. I said, hey, why don't I start a business here? Tough can it be? I don't know how I actually made a go of it, but I did start a language training company down there, eventually met a lovely person, married, had kids. And basically, I lived in Costa Rica for 10 years and had a pretty good life. It was a lot of fun. But in 2003, my wife and I decided, you know what? Costa Rica is great. But me being the pasty-faced white guy that I am, whether you have money or not, there tends to be a bit of a target on your back. Everybody assumes that you're a really rich person, right? So in Latin America, there is a risk of you or your family being kidnapped and held for ransom. Doesn't happen a lot in Costa Rica, but it does happen. I know 2 people it happened to. So we decided, you know what? Our kids were getting towards school age. Why don't we bring them up in Canada? So we moved, you know, to Canada, my Costa Rican family, myself, and moved back to British Columbia. But I had a challenge. And the challenge was I hadn't been able to sell my business in Costa Rica, so I didn't have a lot of cash. I had been self-employed for so long, I was pretty much unemployable. I had been gone from the country so long, I didn't have poor credit, I had 0 credit. So it's like, okay, what the heck am I going to do? So I remember, I don't know if you remember these things, Chris, you remember those late infomercials, you too can get rich in real estate with little or no money down. You remember those?
Yeah, which one was it?
Well, the one flavor I ascribed to was by a gentleman named Ron LeGrand.
Ron LeGrand. I read a couple of his books. Ron LeGrand,
exactly.
Absolutely.
So I set away this course, and this was way back in 2003, and it was a bunch of binders and maybe even cassette tapes and VHS. I'm not sure. Maybe we got CDs. I'm not sure. But went through all this material and put it to use. And my first little kick to claim to fame real estate-wise was I did 18 deals in 18 months in and around the small city of Kamloops where I live, which at that time had about 80,000 people in it. So that was good at attracting motivated sellers. And that was all fun. And then I caught the eye and connected with an up-and-coming real estate guru, up kind of the Canadian version of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And he saw what I was doing with real estate. He saw what my background and my passion was, which was really around marketing. So I ended up going on board with him and his companies and helped him grow from him and one or two people working out of his basement to 128 employees, seven branch offices. And I think at the peak, they're doing somewhere around $200 million a year in revenue with that company. So that was a fun for about 6 years. And I took some time off from real estate. And then in 2010, got back into it, started doing a slightly different strategy called tenant first lease options or rent to own. So we basically find a really good tenant buyer, go buy them a house and lease option it to them for 2 or 3 years while we help them get lined up for financing. And Chris, that's where I got my first taste of raising capital. Because like most people, I self-financed my first couple of deals and then hit that wall, ran out of cash, ran out of credit. And it was like, oh, crap. And of course, that's when the perfect deal landed in my lap. I can remember it vividly because it's such a painful experience. I remember this landing in my lap and we went out, we found them a house. We got it under contract. Everything was ticky-boo. The only little hiccup was I needed $85,000 for the down payment and closing costs. So I didn't have it. I was already strapped. But I'd always heard, hey, you know what? If you just find a good deal, the money will find you. Have you ever heard that expression?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I drank that Kool-Aid, but I figured, you know what? I still got to do something. Not like the secret where the universe is just going to plunk $85,000 on my desk, right? So I'm going to have to do something. So I'd also heard, hey, Dave, if you need capital, pick up that phone and start dialing for dollars. Now, Chris, I'd never really done that before, but I figured, yeah, I'll give it a try. So I picked up the phone, dialed, 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 rejected, rejected, rejected. I'd love to say, you know, I was like the Wolf of Wall Street and I just grounded out and ended up raising them. I didn't. I quit after about 10 calls because my fragile little ego couldn't handle that much rejection. So I said, okay, I don't like cold calls. What else can I do? Well, get out there and network up a storm. Get out there and turn every conversation into a real estate conversation. Practice 30-second commercial, your elevator pitch. Have you heard that one as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So B&I, Chamber of Commerce, Toastmasters, pretty much anywhere they'd let me in the door with my briefcase and handful of business cards. In I went and I promptly raised zero capital. And I mean, 2020 hindsight. I mean.
And this is why I'm excited to have you on the show, Dave, because you know, people here, you know, I talk to investors, I talk to my coaching clients, and they're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna pull some investors together for this deal. And I'm like, terrific. Yeah. And they're like, well, I know 6 or 10 people. I think it'll not be a problem. And I've always told people, I said, if people swear on their children's life that they're gonna give you a dollar, I said, they're good for about 50 cents, you know.
If that.
Yeah. So that's what I love. You know, you have that expression, like if you just find a good deal, the money will find you. And I found an experience that's certainly not the case.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't my experience. And my philosophy now is get your investors lined up, ready to go. Get your investor ducks in a row first, then find the good deal. And that way you've already got the money, right? So that's my philosophy. So bottom line, Chris, I think you know the end of the story. I wasn't able to raise the capital. I had to renege on that deal, back out of it. I'm in a small town, so that was some major egg on my face, ticked everybody off, especially myself. But here's the thing. I also turned off a lot of really good investors because I was so clumsy about how I went about this. I didn't mention one of the brilliant ideas I came up with is I spammed everybody I knew with an overview of the deal. I just thought, hey, if enough people see this, it's such a good deal, it's going to sell itself. No, that's what happened. All I did was succeed in turning a lot of really good prospective investors off. So painful story, but that sparked me. And I said, hey, after I quit sniveling, I said, let's use this as a learning experience. And how can I avoid this happening again? And what can I do to actually turn things around? Instead of chasing after investors, how about if I apply some of this smart stuff I know about marketing and see if I can figure out a way to attract investors to me instead of chasing after them? So by hook or by crook, and over some time, I came up with what I call a five-step money partner formula, which I'm happy to share with you here if you'd like.
No, I'm excited for that. And you know, I think, again, I've been through this process over the last now 6 years. I've talked about the story of our first deal that we syndicated, and we started 9 months before we had that deal under contract. And really, it was about a full year, you know, with the process of talking to investors, explaining to them what was going on, you know, getting their buy-in. And, you know, what I found over time is that it takes a long time to do that. So, you know, as we, you know, a lot of people listen to the show, they are investors. So I think it's interesting to kind of see, you know, how the sausage is made behind the scenes, you know, all the work that goes into it and the way, and also kind of the way things have changed, you know, over time. So yeah, I guess, you know, in your book, Dave, you talk about, you know, it's important to break the ice first with people, establish rapport. You know, what's the first step in this whole process?
Well, my first step, Chris, is actually to create a target group of potential investors. And my whole thought is, especially when you're first getting started, start with people that you already have a pre-existing relationship with. You know them, they know you, right? It's just a logical place. Plus, and again, time out here, I'm not a security specialist or a lawyer or an accountant. I'm just a real estate guy and a marketer sharing my understanding. But if you do it, if you focus on your people that you have that pre-existing relationship with, then A, it's going to work a lot better. And B, it'll help keep you out of trouble with this pesky organization called the Securities and Exchange Commission, which you guys have in the States. Up here in Canada, we got our own equivalency, so we aren't off the hook. And basically, you definitely don't want to cross the line with them. So this is the best place to start. What I always recommend is start with a target group of about 150 to 200 people.
It's a lot of people. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's actually not as hard as it sounds, right? So everybody freaks out about. So here's what I say, Chris, start with 2000 people and whittle it down to 200, right? So the trick is export all your contacts from your cell phone, your emails, your media accounts, get them all in one place, sift, sort, and filter and whittle it down to 100, 150 to 200 people. And then break the ice. Don't do like I did, charge like a bull in the china shop saying, hey, it's Dave, I got a deal, you got any cash? Doesn't go over that well, okay? So what you want to do instead break the ice. This is something that we do for our clients that just works so well. We do a very simple three-step email campaign. And the first couple of steps are basically just nice warm and fuzzies. Hey, it's Dave. Chances are it's been a while since we connected. Here's what I've been up to. Here's what the family's been up to. Here's the stuff. Here's the not so great stuff. Here's what's been going on with the COVID. You know, just really kind of a nice catch-up type of a message. And at the end of it, it's very important that you have a call to action. Well, that's what I've been up to. How about you? How are you doing? Please hit reply to this email. Let's reconnect. I'd love to hear from you. Send that out through a CRM or an email autoresponder to all 200 of your people. And then your job is to have a little bit of back and forth with them when they reach back out to you. Does that make sense, Chris?
That makes great sense. So, and a CRM for, you know, if somebody's not familiar with that, something that's, you know, a database that's managing contacts. I mean, we started off with just Excel, but there's so many good options out there. Like we've used HubSpot now for a lot of years, you know, to track everything and, you know, upload things. So is there a favorite CRM that you like to use, Dave?
Well, no, I mean, there's all sorts, but again, to get started with, you can go with an email autoresponder system, something like a GetResponse. One quick tip, there's free versions and there's paid versions. You get to pay for it. So pay for the paid version, $20 a month, $15 a month, whatever it is. Yeah. So that's the first one. And then the third message in that sequence is what I call the transition message, where we're going to switch gears. We're going to let people know that we're going to switch gears and we're going to start talking about real estate and we're going to do a better job of staying in touch with them, letting them know what we're up to. And who knows, they may even want to partner up with us and sharing the profits and a deal sometimes. So that's an important message. So we got warm and fuzzy, and then this transition message that gives people a heads up of what's coming down the pipeline so that they're aware of it and we're not going to catch them by surprise.
I love that. I mean, I started off just calling everybody in my phone that I was like, hey, I've had this conversation with this person because I had my own portfolio for about 15 years. And, you know, you talk to people like, oh, Dave, you do real estate too. And yes, I started reaching out and doing that. I wish I had this formula. Maybe would have saved some time.
It saved you a little bit of time. Who knows? You've done very, very well. But again, a lot of people don't have the skill set or the gumption to make those calls. There's a living crap out of most folks. The idea of picking up the phone and dialing for dollars and cold calling, it's an intimidating task.
It absolutely is. Yeah.
What we're trying to do here is try to shake the tree and get people to call you because you're at that stage now, Chris, right? Where people are reaching out to you from time to town. Tell me, what kind of a conversation is that versus you reaching out to somebody cold?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, when you reach out to somebody cold, it's a whole process. You're shooting in the dark. You don't know, you know, what that person is. They're probably skeptical, right? And look, what you said, I'll never forget. I remember staring at my phone, like not wanting to dial the phone. And now this is from somebody. I was making sales calls door to door when I was 12 selling wrapping paper. I sold knives. I was cold calling people. You know, there were referrals, but still calling people when I was selling knives in college. And then I sold
Cutco,
life insurance.
Cutco, I bet.
Cutco, absolutely.
Yeah,
I still got
it. Cutco, yeah.
Absolutely. And then I also sold life insurance when I was with State Farm.
So, I mean, you were in the trenches for years. Most people aren't. Most people, you know, they're absolutely petrified
absolutely.
Of doing anything like that. So,
but I guess my point is, if you're listening to Dave and you're thinking, oh man, I could never do that. You know, I'm scared or it makes me nervous or I tried it. Believe me, it doesn't matter how much experience you have. That nervousness never really goes away because as you were saying, Dave, like most people that you talk to probably are not going to invest or be interested. And that's a lot of rejection to put up with. So I like how your way, it makes it a little easier, especially for people that might not be comfortable with that.
Yeah, because we know, you know, that's why we start with 150, 200 people. We already know not everybody's going to become an investor, and that's perfectly fine. In fact, out of that whole group, you might have 3, 4, maybe 5 or 6 good prospective investors out of that whole group. But here's the thing. Instead of you having to call each one of those people to figure out who it is, let's shake the tree. Let's get them that aim to rise to the top and get them to come to us. It's so much easier.
When somebody, you know, raises their hand or reaches back out, like what's the next step?
I have to go, oh crap, now what?
Yeah. Cause what if, I mean, so let's say you don't, so if we're taking your advice and you don't have a deal, you know, what do? You know, it's like you put in the work ahead of time, you got a response, you got people that are interested. You know, if you have no deal, I mean.
Well, that's actually a great place. Here's why. So my recommendation is, this is step 2 of the process, is create a really good investor presentation. So one thing we have to remember is, just because we're real estate enthusiasts, or as I affectionately call us, real estate weirdos, does not mean the people that are getting stuff are at all interested in real estate. They are normal human beings. They're not all that thrilled about real estate. So big mistake if we assume that they are, and big mistake if we overdo it with the jargon, the lingo, the numbers, the data, because most people not super analytical either, right? So number one, they're not all that interested in real estate. Number two, they're not super analytical. So we got to put it Reader's Digest level. We got to simplify it. And I suggest a really good slideshow type presentation, like a PowerPoint or a quote, something like that, that walks people through a little bit about your background, walks people through the big benefits of real estate investing, walks people through your particular strategy. And again, if you do multiple different strategies, pick the number one strategy that you're going to want to raise capital for. That, you know, too much information overwhelms people. They're going to get confused. So just keep it super simple. And then here's another tip. Hopefully you've got some successful deal in your belt. Pick one to use as a case study, but do not pick the best deal you've ever done. Two reasons. Number one, probably the numbers are going to be out of the realm of reality for the average human being that's accustomed to getting 3 or 4% return on their investment. So you start showing them.
So no 50% annual return presentations.
Yeah, those triple digit returns are going to freak them out. Their BS meter is going to go off, you know, out of the roof. So don't show them your best one ever. And the other challenge is, if they do numbers, then now you've set unrealistically high expectations. And even if you have a decent little deal, you're not going to hit those numbers. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes perfect sense. Yeah. And is there, and what size deals do these work with? I mean, I have investors that are looking to raise, say, like $500,000 for, you know, $1 million deal or a $2 million deal. You know, I mean, we just closed on a $91 million deal. Does this process work for, you know, better for some size deals than others, or what's the
It does. In fact, I would say, again, this is kind of our beginner process to get people launched raising capital. This is good for getting, I would say, your first $1 to $2 million raised.
$1 to $2 million raised. Gotcha.
Yeah. $2 million raised. But that might take, you know, anywhere between 12 and 18 months to get all of that capital. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I think that's realistic, you know, and if you're listening, and like I said, I have, you know, I have coaching clients, I have investors, and they're looking, you know, to raise somewhere in that range. And they call and say, hey, I need help. I got this deal under contract. It's probably too late.
It's pretty challenging because, again, you're going to come from a point of desperation, right? You need the money. And then that desperation kind of oozes out of every pore in your body. And no matter how good the deal is, it's going to repel a lot of people. So again, whenever possible, try to raise the money first, then go lock up the deal.
I think that's fantastic. I remember I was reading Joe Fairless's book a couple of years ago, and he said to be successful, in this business. You either need real estate experience or you need business experience. What have you seen, Dave, you know, when it comes to this? You know, what types of traits, what type of experience are typically most successful? And, you know, what is your advice for people that say, well, I don't have any of that?
Well, you know, my number one criteria for people to be successful in raising capital for real estate is to have one successful deal under your belt. One successful real estate deal under your belt. You don't need a gazillion. You don't have to have 11,000 doors like Fairless has. You know, it's a lot easier for him now, right? But when you're first getting started, what you need is one deal that you can point to that worked out well, shows that you've got proof of concept, shows that you put your own financial skin in the game, you've done something, and it gives you something to talk about. You don't need to have a ton of deals. That's the biggest fallacy I see people, you know, holding people back is, well, you know, they read books like Joe Fairless, or they hear about Chris that's however many millions of dollars over the last few years, and it looks easy, right? Easy for them because you've got a big portfolio. But here's the thing. 95% of the general population has never invested in a single revenue property. Their own house does not count as an investment, all right? A revenue property. So if you got even one successful of the general population.
I want to underscore that. Yes. One out of 20 that you talk to might know about real estate and kind of how it works. And even those people probably don't know about syndications or some of these, you know, commercial deals that are going on. Is that right?
Exactly. Exactly. So you got one deal under your belt. You're already ahead of 95% of the non-real estate weirdos that you hang out with.
When I want to underscore something you said, make it simple. And I think the other thing, you know, in sales, you know, we were with my team, I always told them, you know, it takes about 7 times for someone to hear something before it becomes common knowledge. So as you're talking to these people, if you're thinking, okay, I'm going to have this one conversation with investors, remember, they're probably going to have to hear it 2 times, 3 times, 5 times, 7 times before they say, oh yeah, that's what an IRR is. That's what, you know, that's how you manage this deal and do that. And I think this kind of dovetails into my next question for you. So you make this initial contact, you have your first deal, you know, you talk to people, and then 12 months goes by before you do another deal with an investor. How do you stay top of mind? What's your recommendation? Because Dave, when I started, I didn't have a podcast. I didn't have an email list. You know, I kind of fell into that because I had people reaching out and asking questions. And my marketing partner, Caleb, he said, we should start a podcast to help educate these investors. And I was like, you know, finally, I was like, that's a good idea. And then now I understand that, hey, it's also a good way to stay in touch with investors. How do you recommend that people stay in touch and stay top of mind?
Yeah, great question. So good news is you don't have to start your own podcast or TV show or anything like that. However, I do highly recommend that you do start doing some edutaining marketing. So what we always recommend...
Edutainment. I love that. Define that for us. Edutainment.
Well, again, we got to always step back and remember that we are the ones that are really interested in real estate investing. Our target group probably isn't. What they want to know is that we know our stuff. They don't want to know everything that we know, right? So the biggest mistake I see...
Like a doctor, right? Like I don't need to know how a surgeon... Yeah. Does my surgery.
And they talk to you like a doctor. Your eyes gloss over. You don't know the terms. You feel dumb and confused. And when it comes to our investors, a confused mind is going to say no, right?
That's a really good point. A confused mind is going to say no. Yeah.
Yeah. So we want to keep it Reader's Digest level. And you'll hear me say this over and over again. Reader's Digest is a magazine written for grownups. However, it's written at a 13-year-old reading and comprehension level. That means any average kid in grade 8, read Reader's Digest and understand everything in there. Same idea with our marketing. We want to keep it a little bit educational, not too much, don't go too crazy, and ideally a little bit entertaining. And then what I talked about marketing is constant, consistent communication. So we want to be coming out on a regular basis. When we're working with one-on-one clients, we make sure they've got something coming out once a week to their list. So 1 week, let's say the first week of the month, it's going to be electronic newsletter, right? Second week of the month, it'll be a blog post. Third week of the month, maybe it's a video log. Fourth week, another blog post. Then the next month, e-zine, blog, video log. You know, see, once a week, they're getting something from you, short and sweet, and each thing has a call to action. This is the biggest mistake I see a lot of people making in the marketing is they just put it out there and they don't tell people to do. And folks say, Dave, can you really get people reaching out to you, booking meetings and calling you up, asking about your deals? Yeah. You know how? You tell them to.
Man, I wish I talked to you and I had to figure all this stuff out for myself over the last 5 years, Dave.
Exactly. It might have saved you a little bit of time, but hey, You got her dialed in now, my friend. So again, that call to action at the end of your marketing. Hey, if you'd like to find out more, click here, book a call. Let's see if this is a good fit for you. So always, you know what? And eventually some of them will. And that's how you start getting appointments popping up on your online calendar. And all you have to do is look sharp on Zoom or in person and show them what you got.
I love it. So you started with the first step. I heard you mention the second step in there. We covered a lot of other stuff. Any of the five steps that we missed in this process that you have?
Well, the fourth step is all about being seen as an authority in the eyes of your target group of prospective investors. Good news is, again, you don't need to be the next Robert Kiyosaki and sell 8 gazillion copies of your book. You just need to be seen as the go-to real estate guy or gal with those 150 to 200 people. And there's lots of ways to do that. This marketing is going to go a long way. Good looking websites are going to go a long way. Sharp looking materials, dressing the part when you're talking with the people about investing with you, even if it's over Zoom, dress up a little bit sharp. Speak knowledgeably, have sharp looking materials, business cards. Don't go cheap on the business cards. Get interviewed on podcasts. If you don't want to have your own podcast, that's okay. Next best thing, actually could even be better. Get interviewed on other people's podcasts, because that automatically positions you as an expert. And then make sure to let your sphere, your contact list, know that you were interviewed on that podcast, featured on your website and in your marketing as well.
So this is a good time. I need to ask, can I be interviewed on your podcast then, Dave?
Absolutely.
Awesome. All right. I'm going to hold you to that. No, and I think
we'll do it. In fact,
exactly. You set you up on that one. You know, I'm always reading different things. And one of the books I read last year, it said, and this is great for any business owner. It said, if you want to have a great, successful lifestyle business, and what I mean by lifestyle business is a business that you can run and still be a parent, a husband, a wife, you know, a partner, be successful, but be healthy and still have a family and do things that you enjoy. All you need is 1,000 customers and you can have basically everything you want. I was like, wow. And that doesn't mean you have to have 1,000 people buying from you every single day. But I thought, wow, that's, you know, that's not that big for, you know, a lot of businesses that are out there.
You want to hear the thing I love the best about the real estate business, Chris?
Yes.
We don't need anywhere near 1,000.
I would agree with that.
In fact, most of your followers, most of your listeners, and I'm talking about investors, would probably have all the capital they need with 10.
10.
10.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Now it depends on what you like. If you're doing $90 million deals, so you're going to need more than that. But I'm talking about lifestyle type investors that want to build up a portfolio, replace their job income, have that financial freedom a la Robert Kiyosaki, you know, where your passive income exceeds your expenses. But if we're talking about that kind of lifestyle business, you don't need a ton of investors. If you had 10 investors investing $50,000 to $100,000 each, that's probably enough to get you there. You sure as hell don't need 1,000.
I agree. And the first deal we did, it was about $1 million that I raised. And it was about 10 investors. You know, it's, I agree with you. And again, a lot of the investors, a lot of the coaching clients I talk to, you know, people that reach out and say, hey, I'm trying to get this deal done. Most recently, this past week, investors looking or developers looking for $700,000. And I told them, you need to, you know, I was like, try to get less than 10 investors. And I kind of, you know, as I kind of walked him through that, he's like, oh, I could, you know, I know enough people. I could probably get, you know, that 700,000 out of probably 5 people. And we restructured the deal for him and he looked at it a little different way. And I agree, like most people that are doing, you know, decent sized deals, this is a multi-million-dollar deal. 10 investors is terrific. So
here's the beautiful thing. Those people are going to reinvest with you. They're going to refer other people to you. So that's, you don't need a ton of investors, especially to get started.
I love it. I love it. And it, you know, the nice thing is if you build that trust, if people see good results and you stay in communication, then they're probably going to refer other people that they know. Is that, what do you think about that?
Yeah. Hey, you know what? And you can be proactive about that. You can start that snowball effect, get really good testimonials, video testimonials, get warm introductions from your current investors to their sphere because they hang out with other people that have money. Yeah. Once you got, you don't need a ton. Once you got one or two investors on the go and things are going well, you can start snowballing things very quickly.
I think that's fantastic. And, you know, we say we put investors first at Next Level Income, education, opportunities that are out there. And Dave, in the intro, I told that listeners could find out how to get your program with a big discount today. So do you mind sharing the best way for our listeners to stay in touch with you and how they can find out more about that?
Sure. So I've spared no expense putting together a sign here for you, Chris.
I like it.
If people want to spend a day and really take a deep dive into this, I do regular virtual workshops couple of times a month. You can go to investorworkshop.com. And if you put in the discount code NEXTLEVEL, then thanks to Mr. Chris Larson, you will get a 50% discount on our already ridiculously inexpensive tickets, because my model is I'm going to teach you everything in that full day workshop. And then if you want to go out and do it yourself, all the power to you. If you'd like to hire the experts to do it for you, that's what my business is. We have a boutique marketing agency. So I teach you everything and then offer you a red easy button if you want us to set it all up for you.
Awesome. I love it. We're going to put that in the show notes, the code next level, so you can get a hold of that. And Dave, before I let you go, I always ask my guests that come on the show, if you can go back to your 25-year-old self living in Costa Rica, what advice would you give yourself back then?
Yeah, I've started investing sooner. I mean, it's all 2020 hindsight, but yeah, get into doing some deals sooner rather than later. That's the advice I would have given myself.
I love it. Invest sooner, build a network, invest in yourself. I think that's phenomenal advice for anybody. So Dave DeBow, thank you so much for being on the Next Level Income Show today and sharing your story and all this advice with our listeners.
My pleasure, Chris. Thank you very much.
Hey, Chris here again. I hope you found this episode valuable. Now, I have one more thing to gift you. We have a page for my coaching clients where you can get a free copy of my book, as well as much more from previous guests on the show. Just check out nextlevelincome.com/coaching to get a free copy of my book, audiobook, and much more. I'll send you a copy of my book and cover all the shipping costs as a thank you for listening to the podcast. Also, please like, share, and take just 90 seconds to give us a rating on Apple Podcasts.